Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my friend and colleague Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. War with the People's Republic of China. Is it upon us? Is it coming soon? How would we know? We welcome Professor Jim Holmes of the U.S. Naval War College. He is a surface warfare veteran. He holds the Wiley Chair of Maritime Strategy at the War College. He blogs as a naval diplomat. We now examine a new weapon system that is getting much attention because of the war in Europe. The whole idea here is a submersible drone. That is to say, a robot that does the work of a submarine and can do the work of reconnaissance as well. Jim, a very good evening to you. The submersibles suddenly get to the front of the line because of what we're learning in the Black Sea. Where is the U.S. Navy in developing submersibles, drones, and what capabilities do they now have that would be applicable to a conflict with the People's Republic, especially on their home waters? Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Hey, Gordon. This is really the cutting edge of where we stand with our force development efforts. The Navy's been we're sticking with the subsurface realm, so unmanned submarines. The Navy's been experimenting with various sizes and shapes and various types of drones that can do different things. The current very large one, I think it's called the Orca, if memory serves. It's about 80 feet long. It has the capability to do mining. It can do a variety of things, assuming the technology pans out. I think we're still finding out exactly what the limits of the possible are, but that certainly would be a very useful supplement to the attack submarine fleet in particular. If it can actually lay mines in a very stealthy fashion along the first island chain in particular, that almost makes those waters no go territory for the Chinese surface fleet. And if we can do that, if we can close those straits to Chinese passage into the Western Pacific, at that point we walled them into the China Seas and denied them maneuver space. We've made them a much easier targets and given ourselves a serious strategic advantage.
What does it look like?
Definitely part of the mix.
I want to understand what it looks like. These submersibles, they're drones, meaning they're attached to a human being or a series of human beings somewhere. Now, we're used to the flying drones because there could be a base in the United States that manipulated these drones on the other side of the world, although they like to base it a lot closer. Where are the operators in the Navy's version of submersible drones?
Well, I mean that's a big part of the command and control of these things is that there's basically two ways to command and control a drone. It can either be autonomous, i.e., you essentially program it to go out and do its own thing without so much direct human intervention, or you can do it remotely piloted, much as we've seen in the war on terror with drones doing airstrikes in Iraq and Afghanistan and places like that. So I think in the subsurface realm, in the underwater realm, you would have to go more towards autonomy simply because it is not very easy to communicate with submarines when they're underwater just because of the nature of water itself. So I think they would have to skew in that direction. And that opens up a range of not only operational, but also ethical concerns as well. If you're sending out something that's armed to actually do armed things without a human directly in the loop to give the order. And that's it. So there's a debate going on that side as well.
Gordon, you have a question for Jim.
So, Jim, how far are we away from the Navy, our Navy, having the capability to use drones in the ways that you just discussed? And are we ahead of behind, or where are we with China on the use of drones?
I would say we're probably about neck and neck on that in that sense. I mean, China has a massive advantage in one sense, simply because it has so much more industrial capacity than we do. However, the Deputy Secretary of Defense Kathleen Hicks, for the last 6 months or thereabouts, has been championing something that she calls the Replicator Initiative, which is essentially a low cost way of building hundreds or thousands of drones in the next couple of years as we get into this window of danger with China. Some of these would be undersea, some of them would ride the surface, and some would fly. The Defense Department's been a little cagey about it simply because it wants to keep this on the covert side so that we don't reveal too much. But if that actually pans out, we're looking at being in the drone game in a serious way within the next year or two.
Jim, I'm looking at this war with China, and I'm trying to see the map from the point of view of the warfighters. It looks very similar to the map of the Pacific War in the 1940s. In other words, straight up the center is an island hopping all the way to the Philippines, onto Japan, Taiwan, and the mainland. Does the Navy look at it that way, or have things changed profoundly? I know Guam is a big base in the North Pacific, but Hawaii to the Marshalls, to Micronesia, to Palau, to the Philippines, straight up the center. Is that important, and is that something we'll defend?
Yeah, well, I mean, the geography is the geography. So in that sense, the theater is the same as it was back in the 1940s. When you couple geography with the military aspect, obviously things have changed a lot. For example, Japan, Imperial Japan, could actually forward station submarines and aircraft out in the Pacific before World War II, because it had gained the islands from Germany at the Treaty of Versailles, concluding World War I. So at that point, it could push military forces out. China today, however, I mean, it can still overshadow those same waters, but it will do it from the mainland using families of aircraft, missiles, anti-ship ballistic missiles, much more advanced than what we're seeing in the Red Sea right now, and so forth. So that I think makes it a much tougher problem, simply because China doesn't have to seize that territory, those islands out in the Pacific, in order to accomplish its goals. The other key difference that I would bring up is that we, in a sense, over the last decade, but certainly in the last 5 years or thereabouts, have been more or less announcing to China, to all regional stakeholders, that we will not be driven out of the theater this time the way we were in 1941 into 1942. That's what, when you hear the Marines talking about stand-in forces, that's what they mean. That means we were essentially going to defy Chinese weaponry. We're going to stay on the islands along the first island chain and thereabouts, and we're going to make things very tough, and we are going to defeat China's strategy if it tries to invade Taiwan, make good on its claims in the South or East China Seas, or whatever the battleground happens to be.
That's Grand Sun Tzu. Don't defeat the enemy, defeat the enemy strategy. Gordon, you have a question.
In the early stages of World War II in the Pacific, MacArthur had his B-17s destroyed on the ground in the Philippines. If we are not going to be driven out of the region in the early stages of a war, do we think we can actually protect our assets? Because the Chinese are just going to use barrages and barrages and barrages of missiles. I mean, they're not going to leave anything on the ground standing. So how do we do both?
Right. Well, I mean, you're talking about an entirely different problem. So when you start talking about the Air Force and Navy aircraft in bases in East Asia, I think the best workaround that, in fact, I just saw this morning, the U.S. Air Force has certified lots of what they call hot refill, but so basically remote airfields where a bomber or a transport plane or whatever can land, leave the engines running and refuel, and then take back off within an hour or thereabouts. So that's the idea. Spread out to a lot of different places, make it much more difficult on China to sense our presence and actually target those places. But I think the sense of your question is absolutely right. I think it almost feels like there's a sense of despair about the future of large fixed bases in East Asia within that threat envelope. So the Marines and the Army want to spread out on the islands in small units that are armed with missiles and sensors and whatnot, and basically defy them that way. The future of air and sea power, I think, is more of an open question.
There are four Ohio-class boomers that were converted to SSGNs, filled with cruise missiles. They're deep in the water, always moving around. When one shows up, it means we're serious. Are those the best weapons that we have to defeat the Chinese? I mean best as in the least likely the Chinese could hit with anti-ship missiles, least likely they could find, most lethal. What is the opinion in the Navy of those four converted Ohio class, and does China have something comparable?
To take the second part of the question first, China certainly has intentions of fielding a fleet much like our own. So that's something that is not there yet, but I think it's coming down the pike in the not too distant future, in the next few years. I can't speak for the Navy. I don't know what the official Navy opinion is. My personal opinion is that I think these probably are our most lethal striking platform. They have range. They're armed with Tomahawk missiles, which have a range of 1,000 miles. They can carry a wealth of other systems as well. So these are really potent platforms. They're hard to detect until they launch their missiles. At that point, they're easy to detect, at least for a little while. but they can certainly lurk out east of the first island chain and strike into the Taiwan Strait or the South China Sea or wherever the battlefield may be. And that's really the key. If we want to defeat China's strategy, we really need to keep our eye on the ball, which is sinking an amphibious invasion fleet on its way across the Taiwan Strait. And I think the SSGNs, the guided missile submarines, are a big part of that.
And do the Chinese have an answer now, Jim? Some years ago, you published very carefully that the Chinese anti-submarine warfare is very lagging.
Yeah, I think that's probably still true. I think it's probably less true than it was at the time that you mentioned. China has applied itself to this problem, not only in terms of training its personnel to detect and hunt submarines, but also using underwater sensors of various types to listen. I mean, to listen for our submarines passing. That's really what the game is all about, is noise. Can I detect the noise, the machinery noise, the flow noise over the hull and so forth of a submarine, and thus localize it and target it? And so I think that I think they're getting better. And I mean, I don't think we can discount their capability altogether.
Jim Holmes, first holder of the Wiley Chair of Maritime Strategy at the Naval War College, Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.